Hey everybody, welcome into another episode of Make Comics, the Comics Experience podcast, where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. My name is Joey. I'm joining Andy. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Joey.
Hey, off the top, guys, we want to talk about last week's episode a little bit, give you an update on what's happening at New York Comic Con this week, this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, in terms of the Comics Experience booth. But more so in terms of some really great opportunities that Comics Experience folks in the comics community and outside the comics community are going to be offering for portfolio reviews.
Yeah, so our booth, we're sharing a booth with Darby Pop Publishing, which is an awesome publisher that also is going to be publishing through, or they already are publishing through IDW. Very similar to the way Comics Experience is going to be publishing through IDW. So we're in a booth with them. The reason I bring that up is to give them a little shout out, of course, but also because if you look in the exhibitor thing, I think we're going to be listed under Darby Pop / Comics Experience. So if you're looking, remember to look under Darby Pop. If we're not listed by ourselves under C, look under D. just keep going down the alphabet until you find us. But the booth number is booth 2107. There's the main entrance hall where you just walk right in, huge opening, huge doors. If you're looking at that opening and you go to your right before going in, there are escalators that go up that can bring you into a different entrance. I don't know if it's like entrance B or what, but there are escalators that take you up. And the 2107 booth is right at the top of those escalators, right when you go onto the show floor, will be just to your right. Should be visible from there, but on a corner. So that's the best way to get to us. That way you don't have to fight the crowd very much at all. And we will be there all weekend, and we will be doing portfolio reviews for artists and writers like we talked about last week. And the schedule has been finalized, so I'm going to rattle this off fairly quick. You can rewind it if you would like to hear it again.
Excellent.
On Thursday at 11 a.m., artist Riley Brown is going to be doing art reviews. At 3 p.m., I'll be doing artist and writer reviews. At 5 p.m., Robert Atkins is going to be doing art reviews. On Friday at 10 a.m., Chris Ryle, editor-in-chief of IDW, is going to be doing artist and writer reviews. At noon, Paul Aller is going to be doing writer reviews. At 2 p.m., I'll be doing writer and artist reviews. At 4 p.m., Robert Atkins, again, will be doing art reviews. So four portfolio review times on Friday. On Saturday, we've got a really full schedule. So right when the con floor opens at 10 a.m., Kyle Higgins, writer of Cowl and Nightwing, is going to be doing writer reviews. Right after him at 11 a.m., Riley Brown is going to be doing art reviews. 1 p.m., Justin Jordan, strange talent of Luther Strode, is going to be doing writer reviews, followed at 2 by me doing writer and art, followed directly at 3 o'clock by artist David Finch doing art reviews. 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., so 2 hours, Chris Sotomayor is going to be doing coloring and art reviews. And that's to the close of the show that day. So that day, if you just hang out at the booth, you can get reviews from Kyle Higgins, Riley Brown, Justin Jordan, myself, David Finch, and Chris Sotomayor. It's a pretty full day. And then on Sunday, Robert Atkins again at 11 a.m., Chris Sotomayor doing coloring and art reviews again at 1, and me at 3 p.m. for those of you that are still at the show.
That is a ridiculous lineup that I've just heard for the first time in toto.
It is ridiculous, yes. But I think it's going to be cool, and we're trying to get the word out because we don't want any of our illustrious guests and friends to be bored while they're sitting there. I don't mind talking with them. I have a great time talking with all those guys, so it's fine with me if nobody shows up. But if you're an aspiring creator, come talk to us, you know. And of course, anytime at the booth, I'll be at the booth most of the time I'm there. You can talk to me about the publishing program. You can talk to me about any of the courses. We've got some stickers and things, you know, we'll be giving away. Those are always fun. I do have a few panels that I am on. So on, if somebody wants to come listen to me talk about stuff, on Friday at 11:15, I'm on a panel, Marry, Do, or Kill, which is about women's stereotypes in the comics industry. which I think will be really, really cool. That's in room 1A05. At 7 p.m. that night, I am the moderator of the Making Comics Like a Pro panel in room 1A18 with Greg Pak and Carl Potts and Fred Van Lente and Colleen Coover are all going to be on that. It's going to be awesome. And then on Saturday, I'm on IDW's writers panel at 12:15 p.m., and that's in room 1A14. And I'll be on there chatting about stuff too. So lots of stuff going on. Other than the times at the panel and occasionally getting food and whatnot, I will be at the IDW booth. I'll be at the Comics Experience booth pretty much the whole time. So come by, say hi, and chat about stuff. Easier than memorizing the schedule that I just laid out very boringly is going to the comicsexperience.com website and going to the blog page, and the schedule of events and portfolio reviews is on the blog. So you can always just real quick hop on there, check it out, and come by and get your review on.
Excellent. That is a murderer's row of talent. I'm going to emphasize that again. If you're listening to this show, obviously you like to think about the mechanics of comics. Maybe you want to make comics. Maybe you just like process and hearing about how things are made. But if you're at New York Comic Con, by all means, stop by the booth. 2107. Check at Comics Experience on Twitter for, I'm sure, updates throughout the show. And if you have any questions, comicsexperience.com. Should be an awesome, awesome New York Comic Con. Like Andy said, please help spread the word if you want to do a Facebook status update, you want to tweet about it, however you could get the word out to folks to let them know that this is there. You literally get to walk up to the booth and go, hey, person I want to talk to about my work, and get feedback. And that's, as a guy who started off trying to do comics and getting to know Andy and Comics Experience in trying to do comics, that's pretty great as an opportunity. So take advantage of it if you're there. All right, we're going to move on and talk to Kenny Porter and Devin Wong about submissions, about work for hire. Today joining us are Kenny Porter, the winner of the 2012 Top Cal Talent Hunt, as well as a Comics Experience Workshop member. Kenny, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. And we also have Devin Wong, the 2013 Top Cal Talent Hunt writer winner, as well as another Comics Experience Workshop member and another writer. How's it going?
Not too bad.
Appreciate you guys joining us, and we're going to talk this episode about submitting to contests, submitting to open call submissions for something like a Top Cal Talent Hunt. And I think kind of the root of where this conversation started was wondering why you would submit to something like this, just as a kind of general question. I don't know if either of you guys want to come out of the gate tackling that, but why submit to a contest like this?
I can go, I guess, and then Devin, if you want to jump in.
Sure, yeah, no problem.
There's four of us, so we can't see each other, so there's no raising our hands.
Raise your hands.
Yeah. Basically, I remember I submitted because I saw the advertisement for it. I don't remember if somebody forwarded it to me or not, but at the time, I was just working on ideas I had for my own comic script-wise, and this was a good opportunity. I was like, well, even if I don't get in, this is the opportunity for me to research established characters and work on a licensed property just as practice. So even in just submitting, I thought like this would be a great learning tool, even if I don't get in. So I did. I put in the hours and did all of the research and everything, and I thought it was invaluable to have an experience where I actually had to find the voices of characters that were already established that I had never worked with before. What was it? What were your reasons, and what was it like for you, Devin?
It was similar reasons. It was also practice for me. That was definitely the way I looked at it. It was also I was coming up on Christmas holidays, and I work at a university, so I actually get a Christmas break, and so it was just a nice opportune chunk of time to work on it. Also, I discovered the contest through Comics Experience. Actually, I was just going through the message boards and heard people talking about it, hadn't heard of it before, and decided that it would be a nice opportunity just, again, to try my hand at working with characters that I hadn't created in a world that I hadn't necessarily created, which was, for me, a unique challenge, and I didn't enter it necessarily expecting or hoping to win, but just because I had a week of spare time and thought I might as well.
And a quick step back to explain for those that might not be familiar, the Top Cal Talent Hunt has been open to unpublished writers and unpublished artists, unpublished in the sense of working for some of the larger publishers, that you submitted a story based on pre-existing Top Cal characters, Top Cal, part of the Image Comics publishing line. And so I know from both contests there were a large number of people entering on the art and writing side. You know, the size and scope of something like this, it's for a small publisher, it seems like that's, you know, one of the nice things about working with a small publisher, I'm sure, is getting to know the folks behind the scenes. But for a company to put on something like this at that level, it seems like that's had a lot of good response from people of all sorts of different stripes.
When I talked to Matt Hawkins about it, originally, I think for the first one, he said he was going to give everyone feedback, and it took him over a year to give. And after that, he was like, "I'm never doing that again." He was like, he said it was a great, it was great to be able to give that many people feedback, but it was a really, like, I remember talking to him. I was like, "How's the feedback going?" He's like, "It's just piling up. It never ends." But yeah, there were a lot of submissions. I don't know how many there were the second year. I know the first year combined writing and art, it was like 1,200.
Yeah, I think it was less this year because they had a different submission challenge where you had to actually craft a full first issue, at least on the writing side.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, because you wrote a whole first issue. I only did a short story, and then they made me expand that into a one shot. I did an 8-page story, and then
I think part of the reason they did the change was to decrease the number of submissions.
That's all scary.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest, that had to be at least part of it.
Yeah.
I can see another reason too. But yeah, I mean, one of the things you do is you don't want to make it so easy to submit that you wind up going, "Hey, this is good." Then you contact the person and it turns out they're a complete flake. So by sort of raising the standard, right, of what you have to, you know, increase the amount of work you got to put into it just to submit, you sort of by default have weeded out the people who are going to flake out or aren't really going to have the time to do it or whatnot. So there's a really smart, you know, reason for that. So you don't waste your time on, you know, working with people who aren't really going to be able to deliver. That makes total sense to me, especially as a new publisher. So you guys both, I mean, that's interesting. You guys both sort of saw it as a way to practice and improve your commitment to craft, which is good and something that, you know, I think we all should always be doing. You never get to the point where you're, you know, perfect at something, and if you do, then it is going to change, so you're not perfect at it anymore. So that's cool. I mean, what I like about that is that neither one of you were pinning all your hopes on this. It wasn't like, if I win this contest and this is the only thing I'm going to do all year, then I'm breaking in and the work is done. I mean, it sounds like both of you took a really pragmatic approach with seemingly realistic expectations, even if you do get selected and get published, that you know, the work isn't done. Does that ring true for you guys?
Yeah, for sure.
You go ahead and answer first, Devin.
Sure. Yeah. Even if you do break in, even if you do win, it doesn't necessarily mean that you've broken in. So, I mean, I think there's definitely, one has to temper your expectations when you enter a contest like this.
That's completely true, because you won a contest doesn't mean that Marvel or DC are going to come knocking at your door like, "You're that contest winner, right?" Like, show up to your house, like Publisher's Clearinghouse or anything. It's great as a learning tool, and it shows that you can do the work and that you can work with licensed characters, and it does open doors, but it doesn't build complete bridges. You still have to do that yourself through doing more work and networking and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, tell that to Jason Aaron. He won.
Yeah, I know.
He won the Marvel Writers Contest like back in 2003, 2004. Yeah. Was when I was at Marvel, so I remember it. And he got a short story that he wrote that got published, and it was good. And then he got like nothing for like 7 years.
Before, I talked to him about that.
Before he was doing like the other side, I think was like the next thing he did, which was like 6 or 7 years later. You know, and another contest. I don't know if you guys, you're both youngins, so you don't remember this. But back in the day, that makes me sound like twice as old as I actually. So there was a Marvel tryout book. I don't know if you guys have seen these, and these were like.
I've heard of those.
11x17 books, and sort of was half of a guide on how to draw comics the Marvel way, but then you were supposed to also do it, and you could submit. And the deal was that they would be evaluated, and if you won, you got promised a book. And the guy that there was only a contest one time, and the guy that won it, they had to honor it, and they flew him to New York, which was part of the agreement, and he went around from editor's office to editor's office, and everybody said, I got nothing for you, I got nothing for you, I got nothing for you, until he was in the last editor's office, and he's like, everybody said they have nothing for me, yet here I am. And so the last guy was like, all right, you know, I actually like your stuff, so let's put you on this. I forget what the project was, but that was Mark Bagley. Who won that? And it was the editor was Michael Higgins.
Oh wow!
Who's not been at Marvel for years now, but yeah, I mean it's really interesting because you know the way these things get promoted, they get talked about. It's like you win, you're in, you get published, and it's like it feels like you're winning the Rose Bowl or something. You know the way they talk about it, but that's really just the beginning of the work if you want to do this properly. And Devin, you already touched on this. A little bit about how you had a Christmas break coming up, but you know when you're starting out, and both I mean because I'm on the workshop too, and I know how hard and you know how much work you guys are putting into your scripts as you're posting things and artwork on them is coming in and stuff. You know, I have the pleasure of being able to see you guys at work to a certain degree, but this isn't either of your day jobs, and so you're doing a tremendous amount of work that is. You know, for all intents and purposes, you know, sort of on the back burner. It's a back burner that clearly you are driven to get to. But I think it'd be really great for people who are in sort of similar positions where they've got that desire, they're ready to go. What are the things that you do to make sure you've got the time to work on it? Like, what's your day like?
You want to go first, Devin, or do you want me to go first?
You go first, Kenny.
Okay. Well, right now I am in school still. I went back, so I'm like full-time student and work part-time, and I've been helping out my grandmother in town, so I have very little free time. So I try to pick parts of the day. I'm very into scheduling because I have so little free time during the day that I have to find the times where I know I'm going to be excited enough to write or write emails and check on artwork and stuff. So really it's about dedicating the time, even if you don't want to do it. It's that old writing adage, like Stephen King says, where like, if you want to write, just sit down and write and make sure that you get it done. Because otherwise, you know, you're like, oh, I have this great idea. And then you make a little folder on Google Docs and put it in there and never come back to it again. Like, it's just like having another, like, it's like having an extra part-time job or a full-time job actually, and getting zero pay for it. In fact, you probably lose money for most of it while you're starting.
Yeah, Stephen King's probably a good example. I mean, he didn't become successful until well into his 30s, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mid to late 30s was his first novel, and he gave up because he couldn't get anything sold. His wife was submitting behind his back until something finally sold. But, so for me, I have a full-time job, 9-to-5 office job with overtime hours often. It's a kind of deadline oriented environment. I work as essentially a copywriter, copy editor at a research office in a university, working on grant proposals, book chapters, things like that. Sometimes I will work on comic stuff in the office secretly. I steal hours all the time whenever I can. When there's I'll try my hardest to finish one of my work assignments really fast, so I can clear up like a window of an hour or something, to either go onto the forums and post some stuff or to work on a script or something like that. But usually it's working on weekends or taking vacation time to work on scripts or working after work. Matt and I collect ridiculous amount of hobbies, so I have to try and fit it all in. I made the mistake of becoming addicted to rock climbing about a year back, so that's been consuming a lot of my time as well. But no, the comics is, that's definitely, I've always wanted to write, and I've always sort of worked it into my schedule ever since I was in, I guess, high school. I've always been writing stuff on the side, and so it's just kind of a regular part of my routine, always doing it. And yeah, you have to just sit down and write whenever you have spare time.
When did both of you start reading comics? Did you grow up reading comics and you've always been fans, or was it later for either of you?
Devin, you can go first.
Sure. I didn't start reading comics until a little bit later in life. I think I was in undergrad, actually, when I started reading comics. So that's not too many years ago. I think I got hooked with Neil Gaiman's Sandman, of course, which gets a lot of people. Like I was looking to write science fiction and fantasy. I wanted to write novels. I still kind of want to do that. And a friend of mine lent me Sandman for the first time, and that was what hooked me. I think it was second year of undergrad, possibly. And then after that, I actually, it was a very slow accumulation. It wasn't really until about grad school or so that I decided to start reading comics heavily. And that was when I decided I wanted to try my hand at writing them. And so I actually just threw myself into reading them to familiarize myself with the breadth of literature that was available.
And then I started when I was little. My dad had a lot of old Star Trek comics, so I found those in a box in one of his dressers to like leaf through those. And we lived down the street from a comic book store, like it was down and around the corner. So I used to ride my bike or walk there all the time with a big bag of pennies or whatever I could get my hands on, and buy like old discounted issues of Untold Tales of Spider-Man and things like that. I remember the first comic I bought with my own money was Uncanny X-Men. I want to say it's number 183, the one where Colossus and Juggernaut have the fight in the bar.
Oh, yeah.
Like no costumes or anything. Yeah, that was the first one I bought with my own money, and I was like, it's the X-Men, but nobody's in costumes, and they're just drinking beer. This is so weird. I was like, I got to find more like this. And then I read it. I read comics kind of up until probably I was like 10 or 11, got interested in movies and stuff more. And I came back to it probably right after high school, when I had started college originally. I picked up Batman Year One and I just read that by itself. And then what really got me back in was Geoff Johns' run on Green Lantern, which I enjoyed a lot. And after that, that was before the Blackest Night stuff, but just when all of the like newer rings were showing up. And then I started looking more into like slice of life comics and independent stuff. And from there, my bookshelves grew and grew until they started to buckle. So that's where I am now.
Was this the first time either you guys submitted to something like Talent Hunt, like a contest open for submissions?
Yeah, that was the first time I'd never seen anything like that. I had tried submitting creator-owned stuff to publishers before, but I'd never seen an open call for licensed character work.
Yeah, never submitted to anything quite like this either. I've submitted to contests before. I think Writers of the Future I made a few submissions to, and then decided I didn't want to be funded by Scientology money. So I stopped submitting after I got an honorable mention 1 year, and I was like, oh my god, what if I win? So I didn't submit to that anymore. That's it.
Wow.
Was waiting on the beta waves.
Wow! I was just thinking about you know, you guys both were first time, you know, attempts at a contest, and how rare it is that somebody that's going into a contest like this for the first time is going into it with attitudes the way that you did. You know, I mean, I've known a lot of people that, you know, I mean, going back to like, you know, what's the Ed McMahon like $1 million, you know, thing?
Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes.
Like, I've known people that are like totally convinced they're going to win that. It's going to change their lives. They put all their faith in that. Like, I've known these people, and I remember like trying to like talk some sense into them and failing miserably. And yet both of you kind of went into this with like, hey, I'll get some good practice out of this. I'll get a little bit better. It'll, you know, I'll get a taste of this sort of thing. But it doesn't sound like either one of you went in with any sort of expectation that you might win and go on. And I think that's probably healthy.
Yeah, that probably made the stuff better because we were focusing more on we were writing it for fun instead of like this is gonna get me money sort of thing.
For
like
sure.
Picturing all the big cartoon money bags on our tables here. This is gonna make me famous. We just kind of did it because I mean, I from the way it sounds, like Devin and I both did it just because like this is a great opportunity. I can do this in my spare time, and if I get it, great. If I don't, whatever. I think I remember when I found out, I was on the Comics Experience boards, and everybody was posting about who they thought was going to win or what they would do if they would win. And I was like, guys, even if, you know, if none of us win, it's all great. It's, you know, it's a great learning experience. And before I hit enter, like that email popped up. I was like, hey, guess what? And I was just like, oh, I'm the biggest SOB in the entire world.
Non-intentional.
Yeah.
With actually, you kind of brought up a good point. You guys had a box to be in. You kind of had parameters around what you were playing in. Did you find that helpful as opposed to, hey, you can make up anything and that'll be your creator-owned submission? Was it helpful to have this is what you got to hit? Go for this as far as helping you hone in, or were you guys always pretty set when it came to motivation and getting to that end goal? Because I know a lot of, myself included, a lot of times newer writers, you kind of get lost in the woods of, I'm going to do this and it's going to be this and it's going to, and you just stall out. You never get out of the starting blocks.
Well, I don't know what the parameters for your contest was, Devin. I know mine, we weren't allowed to use certain characters. I don't remember if we couldn't use certain characters or they couldn't be in certain timelines. I know we specifically couldn't use certain characters from the Top Cow universe, and that they were looking for stories that were not completely connected to what was going on in the greater scheme. So that's why mine, the one that I did for Artifacts number 33, was like very one shot off to the side sort of story, because they didn't want anything that would change the lore sort of
right.
thing. They, yeah.
I think this year it was a little bit stricter. There were very specific parameters. If I remember correctly, it was that it had to either take place in the past, so like some sort of historical thing, or it had to be in the future, so it couldn't be present day. It also had to use a minor character from the universe that had been introduced previously, who was a wielder of one of the artifacts, but was not a major character. What were the other stipulations? Oh, yeah, and it had to be narrated by either Jackie Estacado or Sarah, the wielder of the Witchblade. So it had a lot of constraints. I actually found the constraints. I love constraints, so that worked for me. Even when I start a creator-owned thing, I'll usually set sort of my own constraints for it. I'll maybe decide, oh, I want to write something, and I have to use that word in the title, or this like this object has to be, I have to expand into a concept or something like that. So I usually put artificial constraints on myself when I write, because I find that I need something to sort of bounce off of. So for me, it was just the constraints actually helped the creative process a lot. They sort of gave me ideas.
Excellent. I don't know if we have any other ground to cover, but this has, I think, been super informative.
Yeah, I don't think specifically we do, other than I've said to both of you individually before, but both of you, congratulations. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, congrats.
Thanks.
Well, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, Andy.
Appreciate you taking time to come on the show and talk about it. If people want to follow your work, what's the best way to get you? Where can they find you, Kenny?
They can follow me on Twitter at Ken Blake Porter, and then portercomics.blogspot.com too.
I'm Vignette Project. On my Twitter handle is Vignette Project, and then my website is also vignetteproject.com.
Excellent. Well, if you have a question that you'd like to hear, a topic you'd like to hear discussed on the podcast, you can email info@comicsexperience.com, and we will talk about it. Thanks again, guys, and until next time, keep making comics.